Stella. I am in my room with my ear pressed against the door, waiting for Hannah to make her move. I've been like this for hours now, a chair pulled up to the door, my notebook open on my lap. A low rumbling of thunder rattles Grafton. The rain has already started, a gentle pattering behind me on the window, growing heavier by the second. I'm feeling vulnerable. That time in Lottie's room rattled me. What did she mean, the recipes were her mother's? They may have different names, but I know those recipes, have them imprinted in my memory from the past year of intensively studying Bessie Martin's cookbooks. None of it adds up. I can feel my reporter brain kick into gear, itching to know more. But I don't have time to solve that mystery, not yet. I have way too much else on my plate right now. I've already started writing the piece, and I have a plan to get the story out there. As soon as I finish it, I'll send it to Rebecca. She is my last friend at the Republic, the only one I stayed in contact with when I left. She'll help me publish it. She'll have to, with a headline like this one. Beloved celebrity chef caught sleeping with young contestant. It will be explosive. It will end Archie's career. And I can't stop myself from hoping it will revitalize mine. I try to put the thought out of my head. You quit, remember? Besides, my own fame is not why I am doing this. I am exposing Archie to stop the imbalance of power that has gone on far too long. Finally, I hear the click of a door opening and closing, and the swish and tap of shoes as someone passes by me. I wait several beats, then crack the door a tiny bit and peer out into the hallway. It is Hannah, as I'd hoped it would be. She is dressed up in a short black dress and tall, high-heeled boots that make the flash of pale leg between look small and childlike. I hope she isn't going outside. I should stop this, I realize. I could go out there and call out to her before she does anything stupid, before she gets hurt. But I don't want to stop it. I want my story. I mentally prepare myself, taking a deep breath. The hall feels darker than usual as I step out after her, pressing myself up against the wall, waiting to leave just the right amount of time. She steps down onto the landing, and I pause at the doors, looking down at her. She stops too, glancing up at the east wing as though she is unsure for a moment. She wipes her palms along the sides of her dress, combs her fingers through her hair. I take my notebook out of my pocket and jot down a few rough notes. When I look up again, Hannah is climbing the stairs. She is moving quickly, confidently toward the east wing. At the threshold, she pauses only for a second and then slips inside. Damn it! I can't lose her now! I follow after her, rushing across the landing. My heartbeat roars in my ears like the inside of a seashell. I wait in the doorway for her to move farther down the hall, my hand resting on the top of the handle, my finger pressed against the latch. Another roll of thunder rumbles through the manor. The air feels fizzy and electrical. An uneasy calm before the storm unleashes itself fully upon us. When she has moved far enough down the hallway, I push down on the latch and slip in behind her. I follow her from a distance, pressing myself into the shadowy edge of the hallway, ready to dart into a doorway if needed. But she doesn't turn around. Hannah stops when she reaches his door. I watch her pull on the hem of her skirt again, arrange her bangs. Then, without even knocking, she opens the door and steps inside. I start to follow Hannah, but realize if I want to catch them in the act, I'll have to give them some time together first. I can't imagine it will take Archie long to seduce her, given how far they've already gone. It's not like she is the best conversationalist. Not that witty repartee is what he is looking for. He'll want to get on with it, I imagine. But I must be a bit more patient if I want real evidence. I tuck myself into the doorway across the hall, crouching in the dark with my notebook, and wait. I can hear the murmur of conversation and wonder what they are doing now. Has he taken her clothes off already? I imagine Hannah lying there, vulnerable, as the figure of Archie Morris looms over the bed, his hands reaching for her. With a sickening jolt, I realize I am not actually picturing Hannah on the bed. I'm imagining myself, and it is not Archie looming over, making unwanted advances, but Hardy Blaine, who I'd worked for at the Republic. Like Archie, Hardy was much older and more senior than I was at the time. He was the man who had started the Republic, a celebrity around the office, a hero of mine. I was thrilled when he'd taken an interest in me, making up excuses to stop by my desk, asking my opinion of story ideas he'd been submitted for the website. I'd been flattered. After years feeling invisible, he'd noticed me. I relished it. 2 years into my time at the Republic, I was invited on a work trip to Los Angeles to attend a fancy dinner where Hardy would accept an award. I got to sit at a table with him and a few others. I wore a velvet Halston gown, rented, of course, and diamond earrings on loan from Rebecca. Only a few other reporters and editors came with. I was the only woman from our company on the trip and the youngest person there. I was so honored to have been invited. At the time, I thought it was a sign that my life was about to change, that my career was taking off in a new, prosperous direction. After the ceremony, Hardy leaned across the table.
"We'll all have to get a drink back at the hotel to celebrate," he'd said,
and I'd been thrilled that he saw me as someone he wanted to celebrate with, an equal. I felt confident and accomplished, optimistic for my future. We'd gone back to the hotel bar at the Oriental. All our hard work had paid off, Hardy said, as the group crowded around, ordering drinks.
"Next time, you'll be the one accepting that award," he'd said, nudging me as he ordered a Manhattan,
getting me one as well, without asking what I wanted. I didn't want to appear ungrateful or difficult, so I drank up, even though I hate whiskey. After the wine at dinner, the alcohol hit me hard. At first, it made me feel euphoric and chatty. I remember talking and talking at the bar until somehow it was only the two of us.
"Do you know how beautiful you are?" he'd asked. "Oh, I probably shouldn't say that."
He'd held his hands up. I tried not to notice the wedding ring glinting on his finger. My head was spinning when we took the elevator up to his room. Once we were there, he turned to me, kissing me hard. His mouth tasted sour, repulsed me, but I thought that once he was done kissing me, I could just leave. I vaguely remember trying to go back to my room, weakly standing up to go, but I was suddenly so very, very tired.
"Just lie here until you sober up," he was saying,
leaning me back into the bed. My eyes were closing as he touched me. "I feel dizzy," I remember saying.
"Here, just lie down," he replied, pulling me with him onto the bed.
The blackness was coming on strong. I fought to stay awake. I felt the fear taking hold then, but it was the fear of embarrassing myself, of passing out and not being able to hold my liquor. When I woke up, I was naked, a sheet around me. I rolled over in bed, clutching it to my chest, confused. My whole body throbbed with the beginning of a massive hangover. He was reading something on his phone, his glasses perched on the tip of his nose. Gray morning light lit the windows. He looked fine, refreshed even. He glanced down at me, curled up in confusion and fear.
"You really drank a lot, didn't you? You might want to go clean up."
It sickens me how fast I'd done what he said. Humiliated, I dressed myself quickly, walking hunched around the foot of the bed and slinking into my clothes without looking at him. Then I'd gone back to my room. In the bathroom, I rubbed underneath my eyes with a washcloth, trying to remove the mascara that had stuck there in a grayish patch. My skin was yellow and my hair was in knots. Several deep blue bruises, the size and shape of thumbprints, were forming on the top of my leg. I took a painfully hot shower, trying to erase the hangover and the new kind of fear that had started to bloom in my chest.
We'd flown back to New York as though nothing had happened between us. In fact, he acted more detached and professional with me than he ever had before. Our exchanges became occasional and perfunctory. The more he ignored me, the more I started to wonder if it had even happened at all. Now, in Bessie Martin's hallway, I gulp for breath. The fear is back, the way it always comes back, a hot panic that rises up in my chest, consuming me. Once again, my vision begins to tunnel, growing darker and darker, until all I'm left with is just two blurry pinpricks of light. The blood roars in my ears. I am not here just because of Hannah. My chest sinks at the realization. I'm here for me. I want to help myself by saving her. I hear something in Archie's room, murmurs, some of them pleading. If I could just expose him. I reach for the door, but I am losing consciousness. I press down on the handle, and the door falls open as the last bit of light in my irises snuffs out like a candle.